I communicate with my next door neighbors by leaving them small gifts in a tree. I'm Cassie.
And I haven't been seen outside my house in 25 years, Matt.
And welcome to You Haven't Seen This Podcast, a podcast where this sibling duo talks about movies that only one of them has seen.
And today, we are ending season two on a high note. We are doing the 1962 adaptation of Harper Lee's classic American novel, To Kill a Mockingbird.
And this week, it's a movie that I have seen and Matthew has not, which definitely surprises me, just because we went to the same high school and I had to watch this movie in high school. So I guess that's what surprises me most.
Yeah, I guess I can just start. That's a perfect segue into what I think going in. Yeah, so I haven't seen this movie, but I have read the book. Like, I think probably most Americans who were in school after, who were in any sort of public school recently, I had to read To Kill a Mockingbird in school. It was assigned reading. And I really liked the book. I think it's really well written. It's a really well told story. The characters are really engaging, and the actual writing itself is very, very good. I guess my teacher just had other plans, and yeah, we never had days where it was like, and now we're gonna watch the movie. I read it sophomore year. In freshman year, we definitely watched a Romeo and Juliet adaptation. We watched parts of A Mice and Men. So it's not that, this school didn't do that. Just, I guess my teacher didn't want to. She might have shown us, clips, but I've never seen this movie all the way through, and I really don't think I've seen any of it aside from a couple little clips and stills here and there, because it's one of the great American movies, according to everyone. I guess I will have my own opinions. What are your thoughts on this movie?
So, truthfully, I don't have a lot of thoughts because I watched this movie. The last time I watched this movie would have been sophomore year of high school, or maybe, freshman year of high school. And yeah, so that was several years ago. So I don't have the best recollection of this movie, but I do remember enjoying it. I also enjoyed the book. I liked all of the work that we did around the book. I thought it was very interesting. My teacher was very big into Socratic seminars. We had a lot of those about the book. So I remember enjoying this movie, but I definitely will appreciate getting to watch it again because it's been a hot minute since I've seen it, and I need to, and I also want to refresh my memory on this book, or this movie, rather.
Well, it seems like we're both kind of going in pretty fresh on this one.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So, I'm curious to see what is going to go into this. Why is this considered, one of the great American movies of all time? Is it just because it's from the book? It's considered one of the great American novels? I haven't reread the book or seen the movie ever. I haven't reread the book since probably high school, and I'm very excited to revisit this novel and this movie and see, does it really hold up? Should this really be still one of the great American novels that we tell? And I think it's going to be a very interesting deep dive and discussion into this.
Yeah, I think this is going to be... I'm excited for the conversation we're going to have. I just need to refresh my memory first, because I can kind of only remember Scout wearing the ham costume.
That is iconic. If that isn't in this movie, I'm going to riot.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it is. I think I've seen, a still of it, but I'm that's kind of all I can remember. So I'd love to have a wonderful discourse, but if I were to do it without rewatching the movie, it'd just be yeah, that's really cool what you're talking about, but have we considered that she wore a ham costume on Halloween?
That is true.
That would be all I would have to add to the conversation.
Well, you know, it's the most important part of the movie, and yeah. The story, and the book, so.
No, obviously, yeah, it's a focal point.
It truly is.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I say, let's not waste any more of the lovely listeners' times. Let's give ourselves a little refresher, and we'll take a quick break, and when we are back, we will discuss 1962's To Kill a Mockingbird. And we are back. We are back from our little trip down to Macomb, Alabama. And we've both just watched this movie.
Mm-hmm. So I want to hear your thoughts, since it's the first time that you're watching this, like we've talked about, this movie that is very important in terms of just kind of American culture and American history. I want to know all of your thoughts, so take it away.
Oh yeah, don't put any pressure on me at all.
Nope. Hey, I never said they had to be good thoughts. I just said I wanted to hear them.
I will admit, I didn't, like, fall in love with the movie. It didn't quite grab me as much as I was expecting it to. I still recognize that there's a lot of, like, technical excellence on display. The writing is pretty solid. The cinematography, the lighting. This is the first time we've covered a black and white movie.
Mm-hmm.
Which is fun, and one thing I love about black and white movies is how you can get so creative with light, because you don't have to make sure the color looks good. You just have to make sure light and dark are seen, so you can do some fun stuff with shadows. And I think there were some really effective use of, like, lighting and shadow in this movie. It was a fun watch, but it didn't quite, like, hook me. I think this story of To Kill a Mockingbird is very episodic. It's all about Scout, the main character, growing up, and it's all sort of the little mini episodes in her life. And that style of story always just works better in, like, a book form than in a movie, 'cause each chapter is almost like a little parable, you know, or a little, like, condensed story arc in and of itself, and that just sometimes doesn't quite translate as well on screen. I thought it was good. It's not, like, my new favorite.
Yeah, I would have to say that I agree with a lot of your points. Again, I only rewatched the movie for this. I didn't reread the book, but I can remember enjoying the book more than the movie. I generally say that I tend to enjoy books more than the movie. Not always, but generally, just because their structure is generally better in a book format and you get a lot more detail and I find them a lot more compelling. But I did enjoy getting to rewatch this movie and getting to refresh my memory. I really enjoyed hearing your perspective on, like, all the technical stuff. I know that that's something that you're very focused on and you have more of a background in and more knowledge about, so that was really interesting to hear about. I really enjoyed a lot of the performances. I think that the actor who played Atticus was fantastic. I just kind of liked everyone. I think there were a lot of things about this story that have always been really emotionally charged, and for good reason, and they continue to be very impactful and emotional so many years later. So yeah, it was cool getting to just kind of, you know, refresh my knowledge and getting to see this again in kind of, and also I appreciate getting to see it again because, like, I was a freshman in high school the first time I saw this, so, like, I've grown up and, like, I feel like I can appreciate it more and actually, like, have a better understanding of these things. even without having done all of the like academic work that I was doing at the time, like in school to understand this book, but just like being older, I'm like, oh yeah, I get that now. And it's easier for me to understand and grasp these concepts.
Yeah, it's a very different perspective when you're coming at just even, you know, the couple years. We're not that far out of high school, but just even in those couple years, it's pretty wild.
Mm-hmm.
Gregory Peck is a fabulous actor.
He is.
And I suspect we're going to be talking a lot about Atticus and mm-hmm. his character in.
Yep.
Yeah, but before we dive in, I'll just bring up some fun stuff I found in the research. Obviously, Mr. Gregory Peck is probably the most well-known part of this movie, and also for good reason. He's the one who got, like, the most awards out of this movie. This was nominated at the 35th Academy Awards for 8 nominations. It won 3 awards. One of those was Best Actor for Mr. Gregory Peck, as well as Best Screenplay and Best Art Direction. This is just kind of a random fun fact I noticed. This movie is so old that there were separate Academy Awards for, like, art direction and cinematography and costume design and always. There were 2 awards. There were awards for, like, Best Cinematography Black and White and Best Cinematography Color.
Interesting.
Which I find very funny. So, yeah, so this movie won Best Art Direction Black and White. Whereas Best Art Direction and Color went to Lawrence of Arabia, which won, like, everything that year, including mm-hmm. Best Picture.
Yeah, but I say all of those awards are very well-deserved.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, especially in those 3 categories that you spoke about, like, those were really the things that shine to me watching this. If you were to give me, like, all of the things that it was nominated for, I probably would have chosen, like, yeah, I think it's gonna win the ones that you said it was, because those were really, really spectacular.
Yeah, it was also nominated for Best Picture, Best Director. Mary Badham, who played Scout, got a Best Supporting Actress nod, which is fun. And it also won Best, what would eventually become Best Adapted Screenplay. The official title is Best Screenplay Based on Material from Another Medium,
which is just,
yeah, that's just too long.
Yeah.
And then was also nominated, I'm seeing, like, Best Score and Best Cinematography Black and White. So, it's a solid movie. I don't dispute, I haven't seen a lot of the movies that, like, beat it necessarily. But I fully am like, yeah, this should have gotten nominated a lot. It's a very solid movie in mm-hmm. all of those areas.
Yeah, it definitely is. I guess because we were kind of talking about, in the beginning, we were talking about, like, is this a good, you know, should this be kind of a kind of a touchstone of American culture, like it is, and then kind of seeing the awards that it got. So I guess I just want to know maybe kind of the beginnings of your thoughts about this. Maybe we can come back to it later.
So you want to jump right in with this discussion?
I mean, hey, man. I mean, what else are we going to talk about? We'll talk about other things later.
You don't want to like, beat around the bush. What'd you think of the characters? What are our favorite moments? No, you're just like, let's go straight in for the essay questions. I love it.
You know what? If we had to read this in an English class, I'm going to go full English teacher.
True. So the reason I brought that up is, this also was perfect, because this movie is going to end our season-long segment, basically, of, wow, old movies kind of racist.
Yeah.
And it's gonna end it on an interesting note, because whereas, when we've talked about it in the past, it's, oops, we didn't realize this was in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
You
can't
this.
really do that for To Kill a Mockingbird.
Yeah,
Oopsies.
this, for better or for worse, and I think we will discuss this. This is kind of one of the premier American novels about race relations and racism, specifically between, black people and white people. There's a lot in here, and there's been definitely a lot of development in the past few years. Around people's sort of consciousness around this. And so it was interesting revisiting this story in that context. And this is just our disclaimer right off the bat that if you can't tell from our podcast art, we are two white kids
That we are.
Who are going to talk about whether or not this is a useful book to use in terms of that. So be advised, if you disagree with us, that's totally fine. You're welcome to. This is just entirely our opinions.
Yeah, I think that, like you were saying, this isn't like a whoops, this was in that movie. Like, this is the central, this is the meat of the movie, is about, is having this discussion. So yeah, really wonderful way to end our little season here. Love how it's been very thematic. Actually, I don't, because I don't love how many movies were racist. That's not a good thing. I don't think that's a very controversial opinion. But yeah, this is just kind of ending off the season, and we're really just getting into it.
I'm at least glad if this had to be, like, a thing, if this had to be an accidental theme in this season, that we're ending it on something that's going to provoke, like, actual discussion.
Yeah, and not just like, uh-oh, Indiana Jones stealing artifacts.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, so I guess do you wanna start and kind of talk about kind of your feelings surrounding this?
Ooh. I mean, I guess for me,
do you want me to start? Do you need time to collect your thoughts?
I might actually. If you have thoughts, please go ahead.
Sure. You kind of talked about in sort of the little intro you gave to kind of this section about, like, you know, should this book be used, like, to kind of tackle issues of racism and corruption in the legal system and stuff like that. And I think that for me, I think that this is a totally fine book to continue using, but this can't be the only book that we ever talk about this with. Because I know that there are a lot of students who just throughout the country, A, aren't given really the opportunities in school to kind of talk about these issues, period. Then there's a group of students, a large group of students, who kind of their only chance to talk about this issue is through To Kill a Mockingbird. And they don't have other books that touch on similar subject matter that they can then use to create more complex and nuanced opinions. And then I think that there's, a really small group of students in this country, just in general, and this is really sad, who aren't even, or I guess rather, it's a very large group, sorry I misspoke, it's a very large group of students in this country who aren't able to, A, talk about this stuff in general, and also aren't able to get the perspective written by a person of color. Because I think this book is good, and I really enjoy it, and I enjoy the film, but we also have to understand that this is one perspective. It's really, you know, it's Scout's story more than it is Tom Robinson's, and so we're really only getting, you know, she is central, she and Atticus are central in that family, and Tom Robinson is important, but he is not the main character of the book. A person with experiences similar to Tom Robinson, or who had family members or friends with experiences similar to Tom Robinson, did not write this book. So I think it's really important that this book, this movie, is not the only time that students are able to talk about these issues. Because I was, like, in my experience, I was given a couple more opportunities to read about similar issues. And those books were, really fortunately for me, written by people of color. But I do feel like a lot of people don't have that opportunity, which is sad for a number of reasons. So basically, to sum up that rant, this book is fine, should not be the only one.
Yeah, that was wonderful. Thank you. I'm kind of in agreement with you on that. I think, first off, I don't think there's anything artistically about either the book or the movie to give it a demerit, you know. Both are really well executed versions of their craft. If you're going in and looking for something technical, I think both of these are, like, if you want a good experience technically, either as a book or as a movie, I think both of these are great examples of the medium.
Mm-hmm.
But our English classes in the US, they're not just about writing and about technicals. They are covering a lot of different stuff, especially our high school. Our English department and our history department were, like, super linked to each other.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, they were very much in sort of concert with each other. And what was kind of happening in your history class would be sort of mentioned in your English class. They would kind of go in tandem like that until you got, like, super advanced towards the end of things.
Mm-hmm.
And on that level, I feel this story is, it's a little outdated. And that's not to say it's bad. And if this was the way that these issues were brought up in your class, that's not to say that, like, you got a bad understanding necessarily, but this is a book from 1960 and a movie from 1962 that are based on the experience of the author Harper Lee growing up in the 30s.
Mm-hmm.
Even as much as you could call this, like, an anti-racist book, I don't feel qualified, just because I haven't done a lot of that, like, high-level grad research. I don't want to necessarily put that title on there.
Mm-hmm.
But to whatever extent, you also have to add the caveat that, like, this is a book conceived of and written entirely before the civil rights movement, and then the rest of the almost 50, 60 years of American history that has followed it, that has been trying to sort of keep that momentum going.
Mm-hmm.
If you are an English teacher out there and you're looking for something on the curriculum to start bringing up discussions of injustice in the legal system and the way and prejudice and the ways in which we see each other, there are more current options that would be much more applicable to your student's life. But so this is always the hard thing whenever we're talking about, like, updating the canon of stuff. I don't think necessarily, like, adding another book replaces another, but I also realize that it's like, if I'm a 10th grade English teacher, I've only got these kids for 9 months. Oh, and also I have to start doing, like, PSAT prep and standardized mm-hmm. tests and all this. So in that sense, it is like, yeah, maybe this year, if I want to add a new book, something else is going to have to come off the syllabus. because I just physically can't fit everything in concert with each other. So that is definitely tricky, and I don't begrudge any school teacher for, like, I'll use this one and maybe I'll pull from more modern stuff, but I'll, you know, use this book because, oh, it's a classic and I'm probably not going to get pushback from the district or the teachers or parents, especially nowadays where the principals and the school districts and the parents and the your local legislators seem to really, really care a little too much about what's going on in classrooms. All of this is kind of to say, like, it's a tricky tightrope to walk, and there's a lot of considerations to walk, but I think there are problems with this story that make it a difficult sort of read. And difficult in the sense that it's like, I don't know if it's quite the best task to accomplish what you're using it to teach as. Just for starters, and this problem was even more accentuated in the movie, it's like, if you really want to talk about how Black people especially, and people of color in general, how they are seen as kind of a different class of citizens, maybe pick a book that has actually more developed Black characters in it.
Exactly.
You know, I was actually shocked. I remember liking Calpurnia. She's not in it a lot in the book, but she has some scenes and, you know, imparts some wisdom on Scout as kind of the mother figure for a bit. And so I enjoyed her in the book, and I was surprised at how reduced she was in this. There's a scene I know, very memorable, where they, like, the kids, like, go with Calpurnia to the neighborhood where she lives with the other African Americans, and that is completely cut out. And I feel like there's a lot of her screen time is just her kind of being told what to do by Atticus, which doesn't feel great.
Yeah.
It might be realistic, it still doesn't feel great.
Yeah, and to that point, then we talk about Tom Robinson, and we kind of, in the movie, we only see him on trial, and yeah, we get his side of the story, he tells it, but it still is like, he's just kind of, he feels more like a stand-in than a developed character. They were like, well, obviously we need someone to play Tom Robinson. You know, he's not, but they're like, we need someone to play Tom Robinson because his story is central, but he is not a central character. So we can just kind of give him, you know, sort of the bare minimum.
No, he's an object lesson for Scout, if anything.
Yeah.
He's the, oh, people in this town can be, like, small-minded and prejudiced, and my saintly father who can do no wrong sometimes doesn't always win. He's an eye-opener for Scout, and he's kind of a humanizing, he's kind of a crack in the armor for Atticus, more than he is, like, an actual character. Even though we do see his wife and his kids, it's like, we still really don't know him.
Exactly. This is Scout's story. And this is Scout's story about her, you know, kind of her relationship with Atticus and how she sees him. And that's central. It's not Tom Robinson. Even though he truly, without question, has the biggest stakes in the book and in the movie.
They are literally life or death.
Literally life or death. He is on trial, and like, he has the biggest stakes in the movie, but it's definitely treated. And then at the end, it did feel kind of weird when Scout, like you were talking about, the episodic nature of the storytelling in the book and how it translates to the movie, how it's like, all the stuff with Tom Robinson happens, and then the audience is almost like, well, we're just gonna kind of forget it. Oh, and now Scout's, you know, it's fall, and Scout is wearing the ham costume for Halloween, and then there's the interaction with Boo Radley, and it's that, and I was like, so we're just, and I was like, oh, wow, we don't really have to think about Tom Robinson anymore. The movie kind of, we only think about him because we knew about, you know, his relationship with the Yules, and then the Yules' relationships with the Yules' relationship with the Finches. But then Tom Robinson is definitely an afterthought after he is not on screen anymore. It's like, okay, well, his story is done. Now it's back to Scout.
Yeah, ending on Boo, while that's how the book ends, it felt a lot weirder in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I think because so much extra, just for time, so much else from the book that didn't have to do with Tom was excised.
Mm-hmm.
There was nothing with her teacher, which is that pageant she's going to at the end is a school thing. So none of her school stuff was really mentioned. All of her kind of talking to the neighbors and having to deal with them was gone. And so while Atticus taking on the case is a major part of the book, because the movie makes it more central, therefore, when it ends like the book ends, it feels odd. It also feels odd because I feel like the first act is all the Boo Radley stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, the Tom stuff really picks up to the point where you almost forget about him. And mm-hmm. then that story resolves, and then it's like, and the ending in Boo Radley saves them.
Yep.
Which is, it's almost this weird callback in a way that I don't know if it was intended to be.
Yeah. I mean, I appreciated the Boo Radley stuff. I liked it. But it definitely was like, it definitely feels very weird just in general, but also knowing kind of cultural climate of the U.S. today. And, like, I'm not saying that this is the first time racism has appeared in America. I'm not, like, that is, no. I am not saying it was like, oh, it was the 60s and then everything was fine and then boom, it's bad again today. Like, let's, dude, no. I have brain cells.
I thought you were suggesting in that first one that we were doing fine as a country for 400 years, and then 2020 happened, and it's like, wow, when did we all start being mean to not white people? Okay.
No.
That's an even funnier thing to imagine.
No. But of course, that is not what I'm suggesting, but just we have the perspective of today's political climate to kind of see all of this off, to kind of, you know, color our perception of this movie. And it did just feel very yucky of how disposable Tom Robinson felt in this story.
Yeah, it was.
He was there until we needed him to not be there anymore, and then we didn't care about him anymore. And that felt pretty gross.
Yeah, it was a little off.
Mm-hmm. And I guess just kind of thinking about, because this story is quite old, and you spoke about it kind of in your kind of initial thoughts, but like, what do you think about this book being like a piece of American culture?
I'm fine with it
mm-hmm.
as sort of a piece of American history and a piece of culture. I think it's great as a sort of milestone, as a, like, here's where we were. You know, in this great sort of evolution, it's like, all right, here's where we were at this point. You know, this was pretty progressive for its time. And, like I said, part of why it's a classic is also just how good it is as a book, you know, on the literal technical level of it. But I also think that we can acknowledge that it's like, you know, this is a piece of culture, this is an important milestone, but it's where we were. It's not where we are. It should not be where we are, and it should not be where we go back to. You know?
Yeah. I definitely think that keeping this as a piece of American culture is just fine, because I think it's just fine, but we have to be okay with American culture kind of shifting and expanding. This can't, culture isn't fixed, but I feel like a lot of times we want it to be. And so I think having this be one piece of a very large puzzle of kind of the United States as a country, the United States in the 20th century, kind of, you know, race relations and literature in the United States, I think it can be one piece of the puzzle, but I think we need to keep expanding and we need to keep adding things to what we think are worthy of study and worthy of conversation. And I think that this should stay part of that conversation, but this shouldn't be the only thing we talk about. I think it's pretty irresponsible if we keep all of our discussions about the history of just racial injustices in the United States, if we in a school setting, if we confine all of it to Kill a Mockingbird. That's doing a major disservice to students and to American culture as a whole. It's a part of American culture, and I think it's important, like a lot of things are, but it shouldn't be the only thing that we talk about. And I think that's a hard thing with, like, when we have classics, of kind of knowing when to let them go and to keep them part of our cultural consciousness, but also recognize that it's time for us to study something a little newer that we can still have similar discussions about, but it's just more updated. And that's not saying this is bad, that's just saying that things change and we should be okay with them changing.
No, yeah, it's like a this is just kind of the metaphor that I was thinking as you were talking. It's like a fly in amber, almost. It's a snapshot of a moment, and all great works kind of are. They're snapshots of certain moments in history and certain viewpoints. And just because we've evolved past anything doesn't necessarily invalidate it. And it doesn't mean that, like, well, we've moved past this period in history, so we gotta throw everything out and start new. But we do need to examine what is the place of these great works in our time, right now. You know, this is everything from Shakespeare, Jane Austen, and, you know, something like To Kill a Mockingbird. It's like, I don't think, you know, this book should be banned anywhere. I'm against that in general.
No.
I don't think it's like, no school should teach this, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But I think it's like, all right, if you're going to discuss this, if this is going to be something you're teaching, have a good look and be like, what is the place of this? In why this book, out of all other books, am I using to teach? You know, these standards. You should hopefully, ideally, be doing that for everything. But, you know, this book in particular touches on such thorny topics that I think if you only have the time to really re-examine one book, then it should be this one.
Yeah. I think, yeah, like you said, the stuff that it talks about is important, but it's an old book, it's a snapshot of its time. that does not necessarily make it bad. It just makes it old. And things are different now. And we need to be okay with the fact that they're different. And then kind of move forward and address the different and more complex issues that we have today. And if you can do so using To Kill a Mockingbird, then I think that's a great way to teach these things and also teach the, you know, the standards that you need to teach in school and teach them how to write and analyze literature. But I also think that it is a responsibility just as, I'm not even just putting this on teachers, but I think it's just a responsibility as just a well-read, literate adult that we don't, you know, that To Kill a Mockingbird is not just the book where we're like, well, you know, it was great for its time, so we're going to keep it and make it great always and never deviate from it.
Very that.
So I know that we generally kind of dive into our kind of deeper discussions toward the end, but I did want to do it first this time because I had a lot of things that I want to talk about and I didn't want them to, like, kind of get lost as we were talking about the other things. So I guess, do you have anything that you want to say to kind of wrap up these thoughts before we go into the other things about characters and the story and XYZ?
I don't think so. I think I've pretty much explained all my thoughts on this piece of media work as it relates to the broader cultural stuff. So if you're still here after all of that, thank you for bearing with us. You've gotten through your meat. Time to have some dessert.
Exactly. And that dessert comes in... didn't you have an English teacher who loved Atticus Finch?
I don't remember if she loved Atticus Finch. I know for a fact I have a friend who loves Atticus Finch.
And that's loves a person Gregory of Peck in this movie. Fine taste.
It's pretty good. I don't remember if that particular teacher loved Atticus Finch. She did love, I believe it's Boxer, the horse from Animal Farm.
Love that.
In a just like, when he gets shipped off to the glue factory, like if you cry every time, you know, mm-hmm. sort of thing. But yeah. But I do have a friend who likes Atticus Finch, and you know, Gregory Peck is a fine, upstanding gentleman. There's worse taste you can have.
Exactly. I don't know why. I could have sworn that you had a teacher who just loved Atticus. But then again, this was several years ago, so
yeah,
maybe my memory is wrong.
You could be correct. I could just not be thinking of it.
I've got two brain cells, and I'm gonna assume you've got the same, and they're trying their best.
And is at least one of your brain cells dedicated to Gregory Peck right now?
Yeah. We don't have to talk very long. I'm just kind of segueing into characters and thought that would be a good segue. But now, look, man, it's hot when we're recording this, so my brain capacity is very low. So I'm just hoping I didn't imagine all of that.
Look, he is an interesting character. I actually want to stay with Atticus because I want your thoughts on his character and how he's portrayed in this, because a lot of people love Atticus Finch. If you remember the, like, controversy when Ghost at a Watchman, the sort of kind of sequel slash first draft of this came out, a lot of that was centered on the Atticus in that book being a very different character than the one people fell in love with in this one. And I think especially in this movie. What are your thoughts on his character? I found him almost, like, too perfect.
No, I can definitely see that. I liked his character. I liked how he was portrayed. I think Gregory Peck did an excellent job. And I like the kind of the way he kind of moves about and navigates the world in this movie, book, whatever. I do think that the most important thing, though, was him not succeeding, like, in Tom Robinson's trial. And I think that was most important because he was pretty perfect. And of course, we're seeing this through the eyes of Scout. So she is sort of our unreliable narrator in a sense that this is her dad. This is the only parent that she has. And she's like pretty young. What is she, like 6 when she, like, at the start of the movie?
Yeah, she's a little kid.
Yeah, she's a little kid.
I want to say she's 6 and Jem is 10.
And then I think that's at the beginning of the story. So it's something like that. And so it's like, part of me is like, well, yeah, obviously she's going to think that her dad is perfect. Because when you're a kid, oftentimes little kids think that their parents are perfect, or just adults in general are perfect, because they seem like they have it all going on, when in reality they just kind of, they know how to kind of conceal their frustrations and confusions.
I'm gonna butt in just to say, there's a difference between, like, wow. I think this is also where, like, movie framing kind of hinders it. Like, when we're getting Scout as an unreliable narrator in the book, it's so much easier because we're in her head. Whereas in the movie, I don't know, I kind of, my suspension of disbelief was getting pinged when, like, we're in the 5th conversation with Atticus that is just like a sainted parable wisdom he's imparting on his daughter.
No, I get that. And what I was going to get to was that in the book, we can see that she's an unreliable character narrator and she idolizes her dad. But just as you were saying, in the movie, it's harder because, like you said, we're not in her head. When we see Atticus as, like, this, you know, superhero among these ordinary folks, and, like, he's just so amazing, it does kind of just seem like everyone is like, wow, isn't Atticus amazing? And it isn't just Scout in her head. So I do think that while I really enjoyed the character, it was, A, important for him to fail, because he already was too perfect. So if he had, like, won that case, it would have been like, okay, come on. Like, this seems very heavy-handed. And, you know, moving on, I think he was still, even with his failure, a little too put together, a little too perfect, a little too, yeah, he didn't feel fully real and authentic.
I love our dad. Hi, I know you listen. Hi, Dad.
Hello.
I love our dad, but even he would attest that, like, not every word out of his mouth in his life has been, like, saintly wisdom I gotta jot down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of it is just, like, I gotta go to the bathroom. You know, stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas, yeah, like you were saying, there is a lot of, like, and now I will give you a lesson that will serve as a motif for this entire film, and it's, like, can I just go have a snack? Like, that's what I was getting.
Did you like his speech in the courthouse? I really didn't. I had, like, real problems with that speech.
Talk about that.
I think for me, it just read so naive.
Mm-hmm.
It was just like, he's making this impassioned defense of, like, look at the facts, gentlemen. Look what your eyes see before you. And it's like, dude, what they're seeing before them is what they're going to see before them is a black man who's accused in a very he said, she said kind of thing, you know, his word against hers, of assaulting a white woman. This isn't ending well for you. And, like, after, once the jury verdict comes down, there's kind of a sense that, like, he knew this was gonna happen. And, like, he was talking to Thomas, like, we'll get him on appeal, it's gonna be fine, blah, blah, blah. But just in that moment, he's, like, making this impassioned defense, and it's like, is there a bit of you that thinks this is gonna work? Because I, call me more cynical, I guess, but I'm just like, yeah, there's no way. Maybe it's because I knew the story and I knew he was, that Tom was gonna be found guilty. But there was a part of me that's like, dude, just put two and two together, use a little logic here. It's not happening for you, at least at this level, you know?
I'm gonna have to, I guess, both agree and disagree with you. I enjoyed his speech because, to me, the way that I read it, it was, I know that you guys are going to let your prejudice and your hatred color how you see this case, but like, I am just, it was kind of also like, there was desperation in it, which I felt was kind of appropriate because he knows that, like, yeah, Tom is getting found guilty because you have an all-white jury against, like you said, a black man accused of assaulting a white woman. So, like, he knows, like, okay, things are going to end badly for him, even though my case is airtight. So the way that I read that kind of those closing remarks were like, I read it as, I know you have already made up your minds, but I am pleading with you one last time to think with your heads and not the hate in your heart.
So you felt it was almost a little like performative. Did you think it was also maybe a little performative too? Like less against, like less talking to the jury, more almost talking like to the town?
I definitely felt that.
Interesting, interesting.
Yeah. Atticus was too perfect, but also I did like him.
Yeah.
I think Gregory Peck did an excellent job. I did enjoy all the stuff he said, even if it wasn't, you know, very realistic that he would just be handing out little nuggets of wisdom left and right to his children and to the town. Not everyone would be like, oh, Atticus, what a guy, he's so great.
Not that dads don't do that, by the way. They just, I just find it unrealistic that he's doing it basically every time he opens his mouth.
No, exactly. Like, you know, people in your life will give you lots of wisdom, whether, you know, they know it or you know it. You're gonna get a lot of cool lessons in your life. But also, there's going to be a lot of time in between those lessons that you're just going to be talking about stuff that does not matter in the long run. You're going to talk about wanting a snack and having to go to the bathroom and, you know, the other things that you talk about with your dad.
It's like, dude, Jesus doesn't drop this many like parables. What are you doing,
It was, yeah.
Mr. Writer?
It was a lot. It was Harper Lee. She cracked her knuckles and went, "All right, time to write a moral." It's been 5 pages. Scout's been talking about Boo Radley a little too long. Let's have her go back to Atticus and she's gonna learn a lesson while sitting on their porch swing.
And I think that also was another thing where the episodic nature, it kind of works better in the book form, because it's like, you know, start of the chapter, you're gonna set up kind of this problem or this like flaw in Jem or Scout that Atticus is gonna try to fix. And I'm thinking of the chapter that's not in the movie but in the book with like Miss Maudie. Nope. Is that the old lady? It's Mrs. DeBose, right?
Yes,
Yes,
believe
Mrs.
so.
DeBose. Yeah, where like Jem, I think specifically, is just like horrible to her, and so Atticus is like, you're gonna go take care of her and deal with this, and it's, you find out that it's like, oh, she's a morphine addict and she's basically dying this whole time, and Atticus is like, yeah, I basically sent you over there to like kind of help her through the end of this and kind of teach you that it's like you can never be 100% sure what people are going through. So like, just be nice to people. It,
Yeah.
that kind of structure of, you know, like a little parable works in a book form.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, also because, like, books you don't have to read all at once.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas a movie, you kind of are expected to watch it all at once in 2 hours. And so it felt very obvious when it's like, well, every 20 minutes,
mm-hmm.
you know, Atticus is going to sit Scout down on the porch and drop some knowledge. It's like, okay,
mm-hmm.
I get it.
No, yeah, I definitely get that. Speaking of Scout, what did you feel about, in terms of characters, how did you feel about Scout and Jem?
I thought the kids were cute. I thought they were great actors, great little actors that, you know, they're kind of in the older form of child acting where you can tell they're acting, but they did still feel realistic. You know, I think, yeah, she definitely, the little actress who played Scout definitely was able to carry that role. She didn't feel, like, bowled over by any of the other actors. I thought they were all really good. I mean, they're kids, and they are kind of, I don't know if it's the time period it was set in or the time period it was written. They are that kind of rough and tumble kid you don't get anymore.
Yeah, that was one thing that I really noticed throughout. I was like, y'all are out alone and alone at night a lot, and like, we could never.
Truly. I mean, that is definitely time period.
Mm-hmm.
That is definitely time period, the concept of just like the outdoor kid.
Mm-hmm. Like the same way that you'd have like an outdoor cat. Like, they were just like out, and Atticus was like, okay, come home eventually.
This wasn't like, even, like, come home by the street lamps. This was just, like, don't die out there.
Yeah, there's that. It was toward the end when they get attacked. It was as they're leaving, like, the school auditorium for the Halloween pageant. And Jem says something to the effect of, like, oh, it's 10. Atticus will be waiting for us. And I was like, you are, like, a 12 and, like an 8-year-old's out at, like, 10 at night. And you're just going to go walk home by yourselves. And your dad is going to be like, you guys are a little late.
What were you kids doing out? Whereas, like, it's like, no, what?
Yeah, whereas I'm like, again, it's like, we have to understand, like, it was a different time. And also, like, even now, like, different cultures in different places around the world, they have, you know, different levels of what are acceptable levels of freedom for children. But I do often find myself just a little scandalized in terms of, like, but they have to be safe.
Well,
of being
also,
like, oh my gosh, what do you mean they're out by themselves?
Well, you can also tell this is an old movie, because if this was like a 90s movie, it would have been a huge deal that Atticus was at that recital.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
because he would have not come to, like, I don't know, Jem's baseball game or something in the first act.
Mm-hmm.
You're too busy working, Dad. Like, that's the 90s version of To Kill a Mockingbird.
Exactly.
And then he shows up and Scout trundles on in her ham costume and just locks eyes with him and just is beaming with joy.
Yep. No, exactly.
From inside that ham. Honestly, that's kind of the best part of the movie. Is... like, when Mr. Yule attacks them, and then Boo Radley comes to save them, because it's, like, it's this fight scene, like, well done, there's, like, tension, and then it'll just cut to Scout, who's in this ham costume.
Who's in her ham costume, on the floor, just rolling around.
It's so good.
It's so good. Oh my gosh. Yeah, there is just something about then seeing kind of toward the end of that fight where it's like, you know, you've got the hands going over the costumes as the two men are struggling, and, you know, Scout is looking at them in horror, but you just, she's looking through the ham costume.
Which
the fact that she's
like,
a ham.
Which has just like a little cutout for her eyes.
Like a reverse Batman, like it's just her eyes.
She doesn't even have armholes in that thing. Like,
no.
If she had fallen on stage, she was not getting up.
She was just rolling. Would have to had the corn and the broccoli help get her up because she couldn't have done it herself.
Not the corn and the broccoli.
Oh my gosh. Like I said in the beginning of the episode, the ham costume. Just so iconic.
Iconic.
So iconic. Oh my goodness.
What did you think of Dill, the other kid?
I thought he was cute. I really liked that he seemed like he was kind of just like an innocent, imaginative type kid. And he definitely gave me the vibes of like, I know he came back the next summer, but definitely like the friend you meet on vacation and become best friends with for like 4 days and then never see again in your life.
Yep. Yep, yep, yep.
He gave absolutely that.
He also gave a little bit of vibes of like, oh, this is what iPad kids were like in the 30s.
Okay, explain just a little why you think that this is a 1930s version of an iPad kid.
Did you look at him?
He gave me...
He's the kid who's like a little too smart for his own good.
He did not give me necessarily iPad kid. He gave me if he were a girl, he would have absolutely swam up to you in a public pool and asked you to play mermaids. he gives that. He'd swim up to you, he goes, wanna play mermaids, and then he would dictate the entire storytelling. Well, we're sisters, and we're best friends, but maybe we can also be cousins, and I'm the most powerful mermaid, and you're not as powerful, and he gives that.
Dill is absolutely, yeah, he's the kid you meet. He's the kid you meet and become best friends with, but, like, at the pool at, like, your divorced dad's condo.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And he keeps talking about his dad, and I do love the innocence of how the story kind of just kind of changes and keeps kind of flowing because he doesn't have a dad, but he is just one of those kids who's gonna flex because he's like, well, I can see that my dad does anything now.
Oh God, absolutely. He just, I think, you I only knew that bring him kid. Up because he just gave me like, Dill is an actual character, fine, but he gives such like annoying kid vibes.
He gives, what's the kid on the Polar Express who like turns around and starts talking about the trains?
The kid in the yellow jammies and the glasses. I don't remember any of those children's names.
But yeah,
don't think they ever had them.
I don't think so either. But him as a character, he doesn't give that. He's a cute, sweet kid. Like, he just seems like he'd be a sweetheart. But the character he represents in the real world, feral.
They're on the same spectrum. Like, if that kid from the Polar Express is like a 10, Dill is like an 8.
Yeah, exactly. He's dialed back a little.
It's like, okay.
Maybe we'll talk about railroads too.
He's one of those kids who just talks like they're 40.
Yeah. No, 100%.
Or is that just how all kids talked back then?
I don't know. Children just do sometimes. You do get those kids who just kind of talk much older than like what they are. Like, there was a kid at work yesterday. I was helping him out, and he just kind of, like, not even really looking at me. He just went, like, how long have you been working here? And I was like, okay. And I was just like, I love the... You know, sometimes children are... No, most of the times, children are incredibly strange individuals. Because they're not adults. They're children, and they're just, like, a weird, tiny person who doesn't really understand a lot about the world, and I find that so endearing.
That's so funny. Oh my gosh.
I met Dill in the real world.
Yeah, you met Dill, what's his name? Was at Was at your work.
Was at my place of work.
Yes.
I was like, it you.
Yes. That's so funny. My most recent child story was I went out to dinner with some friends after work yesterday. And while we were waiting in line, we heard overly loud a child explaining to an older woman he was with, maybe mom, aunt, older sister, who knows, the differences between Minecraft and Roblox. And I just turned to everyone and went, oh, to be eight again.
Oh, to be eight again. You know, I love kids because they ask the important questions. They're like, okay, so, but like, what's your third favorite type of lizard?
Mm-hmm. Dill is absolutely like, a Roblox kid.
No, 100%. He absolutely has that energy.
Dill stole his grandparents' credit cards to buy Robux.
100%.
Scout has never heard of either.
Mm-mm.
And she'd be bored by it. She's like, why can't we be out in the woods?
Exactly. 100%. And you know, that's what we're talking about when we talk about updating the conversations around To Kill a Mockingbird. We're talking about what type of child are all of these children now.
Jem was really into Minecraft, but it's for babies. He doesn't want you to talk about it.
No, yeah, it's absolutely for babies.
He's like, I've never been into Minecraft. And Scout was like, didn't you have a Minecraft birthday party? And he's like, shut up.
And he's just like, yeah, but it's for babies, and we don't talk about that anymore. And if you play it, you're a baby.
Very that.
Very defensive child. Scout, no, or rather, Jem, this entire movie, and for good reason most of the time, was just telling people to shush.
Truly.
He was just kind of the leader, and he was just kind of, they were just walking through the neighborhood, and just every 15 seconds, he'd just be like, shush. For good reason, they didn't need to be quiet in that moment. But that was just, he was just shushing kids left and right.
Well, that's just the experience you get when you're the older sibling and you're traveling around with your younger sibling.
Yeah, I can only experience one side of the coin. Thanks for the personality.
You just get the experience of being shushed.
Yep. You're the shusher and the shushy.
I think we're about ready to wrap up. We've been talking for a while, had a lot of good discussions on stuff.
Yeah.
Do you have any closing thoughts?
Do I have any closing thoughts? I'd say I'm just gonna recap the stuff that I've said. To Kill a Mockingbird is a pretty good movie. It's a good book. I do think that we should think about, you know, whether or not we should continue to teach this and how to do so in a way that is responsible to, you know, students of today and the challenges that they have to face. And Dill is a feral child. What about you?
Yeah, all that same thing. Yeah, I don't really have anything else to add. I think we have hit on pretty much everything.
Alrighty. Well, thank you guys for listening. We really appreciate that, and thank you for tuning in all season. We've really enjoyed this season. It's been really fun. We've enjoyed all of the movies that we've gotten to do. So we will see you in our next season. We got some good stuff in store for you guys, so we're excited for all of you guys to hear what we've got planned. So please follow us on Instagram at You Haven't Seen This and Twitter at You Haven't Seen This One. Is that the handle?
It's at You Haven't Seen _. They'll be in the show notes.
Okay, yeah, they'll be in the show notes. Thank you so much for listening. Yeah, and if you find any, just closing remarks, if you find any dolls or knives, or, you know, just general trinkets in a tree by your home, maybe your next door neighbor is trying to talk to you. So maybe, you know, pay him a visit.